Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke. I'm your art barista, where I serve up great art for your listening pleasure. Today, I'm talking to author, theologian, art curator, Wesley Vanderloot. He's a professor of theology at Gordon-Conwell and is passionate about the arts. His book, Beauty is Oxygen, Finding a Faith that Breathes, is coming out June 18th. We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Enjoy! I've never been smart with investments or stocks, but one thing I've learned over the years is that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. If you want to get smart with your money, you can trade smarter and maximize your returns with Trade with UFOs. Trade with UFOs is a brand that represents a community of users trading with predictive tools. You don't have to be good with stocks. They literally hold your hand while you trade, teaching you everything you need to know. You see, Trade with UFOs is also a portal which provides access to predictive apps, courses, and coaching, all to show you how to make money using unfilled orders. Why am I so passionate about this? Because then we'll all have more money in our pockets to buy more art. It's time to get smart with your money. Leverage your success with Trade with UFOs. Go to tradewithufos.com and use my offer code Brooke for a 50% off discount on all of their products. That's B-R-O-O-K-E.
Hey, sorry, just getting everything started here. How's it going?
Pretty good. How about you? Thanks for fitting good. Me. I know this is cutting in on your and other plans.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, I'm glad we could fit it in.
Awesome. So how are you?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, we've got a sick child in the household, so I've been juggling that today, but we're doing all right.
Awesome. Very good. So I'm reading your stuff and I love it.
Oh,
you've got this like cool, like theologian / art curator thing going on. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty great. I love what I do.
Yeah. So you wrote a book called Beauty is Oxygen, Finding a Faith that Breathes. And it's due out June 18th.
That's right.
What made you write this? Why did you see the need for this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for a long time, beginning during my pastoral ministry, and just seeing the impact that beauty has in people's lives practically. You know, a lot of theologians go around in circles trying to define what beauty is, which that's a worthy conversation in its time. But I was just became really interested in what difference does beauty make as people are struggling with faith or struggling with hope or struggling with love, and finding that often it was the first thing that people would go to, either the lack of beauty or the presence of beauty in their lives, and just the powerful impact that has. So this book is basically my attempt to try to explain some of that and try to put some of it to words.
Okay. So you mean like they go to beauty when they seek out beauty, or they seek out non-beauty? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Seeking out beauty in any moment where there's a lack of faith, hope, or love.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I read the article that you wrote, and I think you did an event on this that I missed too, Why Christians Should Care About Abstract Art.
Yeah.
And I was curious. I love the article. I was curious why you think that Christians or anyone really wouldn't care about, well, art in general, but abstract art specifically, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a long history behind that, that there's a certain suspicion of abstract art, you know, for several reasons. One reason is just kind of the connection to a certain philosophy of life that rejects sort of absolutes, you know, and objective truth and reality. And there certainly are people who are making abstract art or modern art because they do think that everything is kind of meaningless, you know. So there is a form of modern art and abstract art that is, I guess, in a sense, anti-Christian or anti-religious, but that often ignores the deep strains, religious impulses and spiritual impulses within modern art, and abstract art in particular, as a way of really trying to get at what is most meaningful in life, and to try to, or articulate in all of these different visual forms, like the meaning of what's spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and so there are those reasons, and then just kind of the practical reasons of, I don't understand what this is about, you know,
right.
Or that common thing you hear, like, I feel like I could do that, or my kid could do that,
exactly.
Which often ignores how abstract art is connected to all kinds of other artistic traditions and would only exist often because these right. artists have been schooled in those traditions, you know, so
right.
kind of the context and the history of that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That is such a pet peeve of mine. My kid could do that. No, they couldn't.
No. No, certainly not.
So let's back up. How did you get into this? Why are you so passionate about art?
It began more than 20 years ago when I was a youth pastor and mm-hmm. recognizing that every time I showed the students a painting or read a story or, you know, showed a film clip, like the lights would come on for mm-hmm. them and yeah. they would get something that I had been trying to explain mm-hmm. in a more immediate, you know, intuitive way
uh-huh.
and just saw the power of the arts for, you know, telling truth slant and engaging them emotionally and all of this stuff. So I started getting really interested in that. You know, I dabbled in lots of things myself, classical music, photography, dance, writing, but eventually decided, okay, I really just want to study this. I want to study this connection more and
right.
found my way to a PhD program in theology, imagination, and the arts with a beautifully eclectic group of people who were doing all sorts of projects and fell in love with this whole field and its promise for theology yeah. and the church and beyond.
Yeah, I love that because I read that. I read that where you got your degree from, and I was like, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, it was great. Really yeah. beautiful.
But that's, I mean, I think that, and I'm saying this, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but pardon the pun, but a lot of Christians are, at least a lot of the ones that I grew up with, just kind of like not interested in art, like kind of like what I asked before. And just like, why are they so suspicious? I guess they don't understand it.
Well, sometimes it's because there's lack of understanding, but I think it's this faulty perspective of how art and beauty are not necessary.
Okay.
So, and there's lots of reasons why this is the case, but generally speaking, I think there's a lot of Christians, there's a tendency in a lot of Christian traditions to prioritize or emphasize truth and morality as necessary things, but beauty and the aesthetic side of life are just sort of this nice add-on, this kind of luxury.
Okay.
Without recognizing that you can't have truth and goodness without beauty. I mean, they all go together and they're all necessary. That's why my book is called Beauty is Oxygen.
Yeah.
You know, beauty is not perfume. Beauty is not, you know, some sort of nice thing that is wonderful to have. It's actually really necessary for a full life, for a flourishing life. You know, and so some of that, it goes back to, you know, the romantics and this idea of should just be art for art's sake, mm-hmm. you know. And art should not be constrained by truth, should not be constrained by morality. But anytime you try to separate these three big areas of life,
mm-hmm.
truth, morality, and beauty, all of them will suffer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. That's right on. So, and you said in the article, why Christians should care about abstract art. And I love this. That's what I wrote it down. By highlighting the relationship between shapes or colors, abstract art unleashes our imaginations to consider how to bring different elements to forge an alluring whole. This is a profound gift to those who embrace the gospel of reconciliation. I love that. That's top notch. Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, that is connected to how I like to define beauty, which is about the kind of wholeness that we discover, or the kind of the alluring unity of something, but based on all of these differences coming together, you know, right? So it's goes back to ancient definitions of beauty as harmony and proportion. And that's true to some extent, but I think that classical tradition of defining what beauty is emphasizes the harmony and the unity, sometimes to the detriment of the differences and the entanglement of all the different forms. So it's both of those things, right? It's how we can be attracted to, you know, a painting that has all of these things going on, but it's still one painting, you know? So it's that interplay between unity and diversity that is at the heart of what beauty is.
Awesome.
And you get that naturally in landscapes and in the human figure and, you know, the subjects of a lot of representational painting and abstraction and other forms of art just kind of zoom out or zoom in so that we pay closer attention to kind of where all those differences touch each other.
Right, right. So that's awesome. So you were talking about in the article, you were saying that abstract art, you were saying, listing four reasons why Christians should get into abstract art. And one of them was, let's see, and I read the last one. Abstract art is an expression of humanity, image bearing creativity. I can't talk. Creativity, read my writing. So because our creator is creative, we're creative. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important to emphasize that every single human being is creative. Okay. So sometimes there can be this lie out there, or we can believe it ourselves, like, oh, I'm not creative, you know, because I'm not an artist.
Right.
Which isn't true. I mean, everyone is creative, whether you're creating spreadsheets or you're creating, you know, or like you're Shakespeare.
Right.
Not everyone is an artist, but everyone is creative. So because we're created in the image of a maker, you know, all of us are makers. It's just that then some people have the specific gift of artistry, of visualizing things or putting sounds together or creating stories.
Cool. I love that. I love that.
J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Lord of the Rings, he coined this phrase sub-creators to talk about who we are as humanity. You know, only God is the creator, but if we're created in God's image, then we're all sub-creators in that we're all kind of constantly creating little miniature worlds.
Right, right.
In our work.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that. The church I go to now, I go to Christ Central, and they always have a painting that corresponds with the sermon.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And that's never happened in any of the other churches I've been in.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I love any opportunity to incorporate the arts like that, and so that it's a fully sensory, fully embodied experience. You know, I'm all for it.
Yeah. And I noticed that you did youth. I guess you were just talking about it, the youth ministry at Twin Oaks in St. Louis, which my grandparents went there. So I've been there.
Oh, wow. That's a crazy connection. Yeah. I started interning there during seminary and then moved into the full-time youth director role for a while until we moved.
Cool. They were there when Rodney, I forget his last name, but
Rodney Storts.
Yep. Yeah, he was there.
Wow, back in the day.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
Fascinating.
But so who is your favorite artist?
Visual artist? Boy, you know, that's such a hard call. Often I have to narrow it down to genre or, you know, historical period. But I've been doing a fair amount of work on Van Gogh.
Yeah.
And so I'm really interested in the notion of resonance. So people who have a really strong resonance relationship with creation or with their materials. And I think I mean, Van Gogh is such a prime example of that because he experienced the world so intensely. You know, the colors were so vibrant and the sounds were so acute. It literally drove him mad. You know, if you know the story of Van Gogh, he eventually committed suicide because the world was just too much. He just couldn't. His painting was a way of him trying to process and present to others his overly resonant relationship with the world. But what that means is when we encounter Van Gogh's work, you feel it. Like you feel that vibrancy and you feel that aliveness, that kind of relationship that he had. And so that by learning how to be present with Van Gogh's work, I think we even learn a whole different way of relating to the world, a little bit more like he did. And yeah, just the passion and the immediacy that he was able to communicate through his landscapes is just and through his portraiture and such is really unrivaled in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he's one of my favorites as well. Do
Yeah.
you think his art was I think his art was more therapeutic than drove him mad.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. His story is so complex. You know, certainly there's mental health issues in his story. You know, but some of his best work was done in the psychiatric hospitals, you
Oh
know. His, so even when he wasn't in direct contact with creation, he was still able to conjure all of that from within the walls of the hospital, which is just incredible.
It's amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
I think he was able to just look out his window and create these fabulous
Yeah.
landscapes, vibrant
Yeah, that's right.
and everything. So
That's right. I would say, in terms of a contemporary artist in a very different genre, going back to abstract art, I really appreciate the painter Makoto Fujimura.
I was reading about him. I wanted to hear about him.
Yeah, he's a contemporary Japanese American artist who uses, you know, ancient Japanese methods of slow art, as he calls them, Johanga, taking, you know, the actual pigments and grinding them up, or the minerals and grinding them up in to make his pigments, and layer upon layer upon layer, and uses a lot of gold leaf and things as well. It's just really stunning work to be, particularly in person. You know, there's only so much you can get from images of this art, especially when you're dealing with those kind of minerals that just shimmer, you know, on the canvas, and you have all those layers, so you can actually look alongside the painting and see all of it. But I appreciate his process just as much as I appreciate the products of his art.
I love abstract art, and I really liked his art just because you can come to it with whatever you're going through, whatever you have, and you can kind of relate it to. Or you could, I mean, abstract art doesn't have a message really, and so you can just kind of create your own message.
Yeah, there's a potential to meet the viewer where they are for sure. And it's that magical interaction between whatever the intention was in creating the work and then whatever you're receiving, and then kind of that third space of interaction between those as well.
I worked with a I still work with her, not that I stopped, but I work with an abstract artist, and she does these great, like, vibrant, just paintings. And she does it to cure her depression. And but the way you see them, they're just so happy and so bright and so vivid that, I mean, it just brightens anyone's mood. That's a cool thing about I don't know, I think that's an interesting thing, and I've talked to several artists about it. Like, when you were creating this, did you have, when if you were meaning to portray one thing and someone receives something completely different from it, or takes away something completely different from it, does that bother you? And most of the time they say no. But I think if it were me, I'd be like, well, yeah, but that's not what I meant. If
Yeah.
I heard them say it was something totally different.
Yeah, I think all artists have to grapple with the fact that once a work is made and it's put out in the world, you can't contain the meaning. You know, there can be that original intention, and that's good and beautiful, but there has to be a certain measure of release, you know, and openness, because yeah, people will ascribe all kinds of meaning to that work.
Right, right. Yeah, I just think that's an interesting thing. And this is just silly, but I remember I was at Covenant College for a year, where I know you were. And
yes.
And they were selling these prints, like, in the lobby one that year. And I bought this Van Gogh piece, and it's famous, and I forget what it's called, but it's like a alleyway, and it's got a little, like, looks like a cafe. I thought it was a cafe, that's why I got it. And it kind of reminded me of, I don't know if this was there when you were, this place called Cafe Taza. Reminded me of that alleyway there. So that's why. But that's not at all what Van Gogh had in mind.
Sure.
But,
yeah, but the power of so much art is that it can connect to our own memories, you know, and the all are the places that we love, even though it may not be the same place. There, I think that's part of the resonance that you can experience.
Right. Right. Cool. Cool. So back to abstract art and the Christian, sorry, detour.
Yeah.
But how do you think that Christians can better engage at all in abstract art, I guess?
I think it needs to start with a willingness just to be with it, you know? I mean, here in Charlotte, there's amazing collections at the Beckler and at the Mint and other places. So even just taking advantage of, you know, free museum days or whatever the case may be, or paying admission and spending time and not rushing that, I think, is really important. I think there can be a tendency to say, oh, I don't get it, or I don't like it, and so I'm moving on.
Right.
But in doing that, you've missed an opportunity to actually be impacted, which takes more than a couple seconds, you know, like the average time someone spends before a painting in a museum is 15 seconds, which is just not nearly enough time to receive what the art wants to give to you. So it can help to not do that alone, you know, to go with somebody else, and spend, say, 15 minutes before one particular work and just observe, listen, pay attention, and then have a discussion about it. Because someone else might have a totally different experience or different perspective that can really enhance yours, particularly if your initial reaction is maybe a bit flat or confused or anything like that. And it can help to learn a little bit about the artist as well.
And I always found that, like, there are paintings that I've seen and not liked, but then when I hear the story or the purpose behind it,
that's right,
like, that just changes everything, and now I love it. And
yeah,
it's kind of revolutionary. I'm like, oh, that's it's yeah. It's just I think you were talking about it in one of your articles, or maybe but just how you can feel it, you can feel the art. It's just,
yeah, to your point, I mean, a little bit of background, a little bit of knowledge can go a long way.
Right.
Like Mark Rothko, for example, you know, this is a great example of someone who just have, you know, big, huge panels of color, right? And red on top, yellow on the bottom or something. And if you don't know anything about that, you're like, oh, cool, there's colors, you know?
Squares.
But if you know that he was trying to represent, you know, the thin veil between heaven and earth, you know, or the experience of the divine within the everyday, you know, stuff like that can really enhance kind of what you're looking for, what kind of experience that is for you.
Yeah, and I didn't know that, actually. So it's actually very.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is not in Charlotte, but would definitely recommend anyone who can go visit the Rothko Chapel. It's a very moving experience.
That's awesome. I think we do have a Rothko in at the Mint, like one.
I think that's true. Yeah.
One piece. But yeah, that's amazing. So yeah, I love that. And I think that you're absolutely right. You need to kind of spend more than 5 minutes. And I tend to do that because I don't know what to do. And I just go, like, do I, And so, I mean, like, how long do I stare here? Do I ask questions? I don't think a lot of people know exactly what to do in an art museum, and
That's true.
myself included. So,
Yeah.
so what's your favorite museum here?
In terms of permanent collection, I would definitely lean toward the Mint. I love the Beckler, it's the Modern Art Museum, but it kind of depends on what is on exhibit, because their permanent collection is a bit limited. But sometimes, I think 6 months ago they had a Picasso exhibit that was stunning, and so I just enjoy going in and browsing all that I can.
We've also got a lot of good galleries here, so
that's true. That's true, including Gordon Conwell. Now we're putting that on the map as one of the galleries. Yeah, I get to curate all the exhibits there now. And
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we have an exhibit of Alfred Messier right now, one of the foremost lithographers and French modernist artists. And we're going to have a large exhibit in the fall of Edward Nippers, which is very exciting.
Cool. That is awesome. Who'd have thought?
Yeah,
That's amazing.
That's really great.
That is really cool. So, like, when do you guys open?
Just normal business hours. I mean, you can come by anytime. Typically Tuesday to Friday, our best, 9 to 4. And all of the art is upstairs on the second floor of the seminary, both in the rotunda, which is like the entryway, and then down in one of the wings, there's all, art tracking that we get to just rotate things around in there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I will definitely be doing that sometime soon.
Yeah, please do.
Very cool. So where can people find you?
Well, kind of all over. You can probably the best way of connecting with all the various bits and pieces of what I'm able to be involved with is on Linktree.
Okay. Linktree.
So go to my Linktree. There's the site, link to the work at Gordon Conwell, link to the books, links to the special events and my writing and such. And there's, contact form and stuff there as well. Folks want to reach out.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you're having a book. Did I read a book launch sometime soon?
There is a book launch. Yeah. There are several opportunities to interact with people on the subject of the book, but the official launch is here in Charlotte at Warehouse 242 on June 20, which is a Thursday.
Okay.
That will correspond with a gallery opening there, which should include some really interesting art on the theme of beauty is oxygen from friends and artists here in Charlotte. And of course, readings from the book and time for dialogue and some good live jazz and things like that as well.
Cool. Is Rod Weimer one of the artists?
Yes, he is.
I love his work.
Yeah.
He's fabulous.
I love him as well.
Yeah. That is awesome. Well, thank you so much, Wes. I really appreciate you talking to me and chatting with me.
What a delight.
Your book stories and your history knowledge and everything. That's fabulous.
Yep. Appreciate your interest in all that you do.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This has been amazing.
Thank you so much to Wes Vanderloot for chatting with me. You have the coolest job ever. You definitely want to check out his book, Beauty is Oxygen, Finding Faith That Breathes. If you're finding value in these episodes, please like, subscribe, and share, or consider sponsoring me on Patreon. If you have an idea for an episode, please reach out and tell me. I'm always looking for cool new things in the art world. As always, thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production, music by Corey Knoxville.